Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, December 16th, 2013. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Capone bond reduced in Rachel Anderson murder case. 900,000-pound megalode inches towards Idaho through eastern Oregon. And judge throws out part of Utah polygamy law. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The 900,000-pound General Electric megalode heading to the Alberta tar sands is expected to hit the Idaho state line near Homedale late Wednesday. The wastewater evaporator built in western British Columbia has passed through John Day, Oregon, and the Ontario Argus Observer says the megalode should arrive in Vail, about 10 miles west of the state line, early Wednesday morning. Since arriving at the port of Umatilla last month, the megalode has encountered protests and civil disobedience from environmentalists and tribal members opposed to the tar sands shipments. Opposition is based on both global climate change caused by the tar sands development in northern Alberta and tribal sovereignty issues. Safety on the highways and convenience for travelers are also issues being brought up. In Oregon, the megalode passes through tribal land. Other eastern Oregon residents have showed up at Transportation Department meetings and expressed their concerns. NISA Road District Supervisor Wes Allison said his jurisdiction and others along the Oregon portion of the route will not block the megalode, but at the same time said the Oregon Department of Transportation doesn't have the legal ability to authorize megalodes on Clark Boulevard in NISA. Allison said, "Our roadways are public roadways, and to deny someone access to that, you'd have to have reason. You can't just pick and choose who you're going to let drive on the roads. We think they've addressed our concerns about the weight limitations. There's plenty of people in the community who are concerned about it, but I don't know that I can just tell them no and not have a good solid reason to do that." General Electric subsidiary Resource Conservation Company International and hauler Omega Morgan want to bring seven more of the giant two-lane-wide megalodes through eastern Oregon this winter. The companies plan on moving the loads towards southeastern Idaho, crossing the Snake River, and then from there up Lost Trail Pass on U.S. Highway 93 into Montana. The megalode on the road now is 380 feet long, and Oregon officials say it can only travel after 10 p.m. at night, must pull over to let traffic by periodically, and not travel during snowy, icy, or foggy conditions. The loads are traveling mostly on two-lane U.S. and state highways, as well as on some county roads. The load generally travels at about 35 miles per hour, slowing traffic, which can't get around it, on narrow two-lane highways. Much of the route, especially around John Day, Oregon, and Salmon, Oregon, has numerous hairpin curves. The megalode is 22 feet wide, 18 feet tall, meaning it cannot travel under most overpasses on interstate routes. The Athabasca Oil Company will take ownership of the wastewater evaporators once they arrive on site near Fort McMurray, Alberta. A federal judge Friday threw out part of Utah's anti-polygamy laws. U.S. District Judge Clark Wadoop of Salt Lake City said the part of the law that prohibits cohabitation violates the First Amendment rights of bigamist Cody Brown and his four wives. Brown, who has had his family filmed for the TV program Sister Wives, sued over the state bigamy laws in 2011 and then moved to Las Vegas because of the threat of prosecution. First District Judge Barbara Buchanan in Coeur d'Alene has ruled those who lease cabins on state land on Priest Lake have no right to continue staying there once the state decides their lease has expired. Jan Nunemaker sued after her family were outbid for the land on Priest Lake contains a cabin Nunemaker's family built. Buchanan wrote in her decision, even if the lease could be construed to provide a right of continuation past the expiration of the lease, such right is unenforceable as a matter of law, given the Idaho Supreme Court's recent determination that the Idaho Constitution prohibits the board from offering a lease renewal without first making the lease available for public auction. Second District Judge Jeff Brody lowered Moscow resident David Stone's bail Friday from $250,000 to $25,000 after Stone pled guilty to one of the charges connected to the death of Rachel Anderson and promised to testify at the first-degree murder trial of Anderson's estranged husband, Charles A. Capone, also of Moscow. Anderson disappeared in April 2010 and no body has been found. A Clarkston resident at the time, Anderson was last known to have visited Capone's repair shop in Moscow on April 16th of that year. Her vehicle was found abandoned in Lewiston. County Prosecutor Bill Thompson told the Lewiston Tribune the 50-year-old Stone had been interviewed extensively by law enforcement while being held at the Latah County Jail, and he's convinced Stone was not involved in planning to kill or actually killing Rachel Anderson. Thompson said Stone arrived on the scene as the alleged murder was taking place and helped dispose of the body. Judge Brody has yet to accept a plea agreement proposal in which first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit first-degree murder charges against Stone would be dropped. Last week, Stone pled guilty to felony failure to notify law enforcement or a coroner of a death, but if the plea agreement is rejected, he has the option of withdrawing that guilty plea. The interrogations at the Latah County Jail have led to divers searching part of the Snake River near Lewiston. No body has been found. If released on bail, Stone would have to check in at the jail every day at 8 p.m. Capone's trial is set to begin March 31st in Moscow. The U.S. Department of Energy published its plan for disposing high-level radioactive waste at Hanford Friday. The plan outlines how 99% of the nuclear waste stored in 177 underground tanks dating back to World War II will be removed and eventually turned into glass-like logs in the new $12 billion vitrification plant at Hanford. The underground tanks themselves will be filled with grout and stabilized. Tom Carpenter of Hanford Challenge criticized the decision to leave 1% of the high-level nuclear waste in place in the tanks. Carpenter said, "That's 500,000 gallons or more. We expect all of the waste from the tanks to be removed." King County Superior Court Judge Andrea Darvis says she will issue a ruling on a challenge to the new $15 per hour minimum wage in SeaTac by the end of the year. The minimum wage law, approved by voters in the Seattle suburb by a margin of 77 votes, is set to go into effect January 1st. The law also requires employers in the county, that includes SeaTac International Airport, pay for a minimum number of sick days. The Alaska Airlines Group is leading the challenge, arguing the city of SeaTac does not have the power to regulate minimum wages at the airport because the Port of Seattle has authority there. The group also says the initiative dealt with multiple issues, which is a violation of constitutional provisions regarding voter initiatives in Washington. Supporters say the port does not enact social welfare laws, which is the city's role. They say the minimum wage increase is needed because wages are not keeping up with inflation or housing costs in the area. The Idaho Supreme Court reports there has been an 82% increase in involuntary commitment cases statewide in the last 5 years. Supreme Court Administrator Patty Court told the Associated Press, although there has not been a study of why the number of cases has increased sharply, the court has done an informal poll of judges who think Idaho Department of Health and Welfare budget cuts, limited health care access, a bad economy, and a lack of affordable mental health services are all behind the increase. The number of mental commitment cases filed in Idaho in 2012 was 4,500. Most mental hold cases are initiated by police, emergency room physicians, or officials at another facility. In Idaho, a judge must be notified of the hold within 24 hours, which means a case will be filed. Sixth District Court Judge Paul Lagus said, "They tell me the state used to have clinicians who would actually make contact with people at their homes to see how they were doing. If they were taking their meds, they'd check their pulse, so to speak, to see if they're deteriorating to the point where they might need intervention. We're losing a layer of support, so when our mentally ill people start acting mentally ill, they don't take their medication because they forgot or they can't afford it or don't like it. Sooner or later, they deteriorate to a place where they're in front of us for an involuntary commitment." The Department of Health and Welfare says funding has dropped 19% since 2008, meaning most of their effort goes towards prioritizing cases where someone is an immediate danger to themselves or others, and not spending as much time on those who don't have insurance. The department cut 35 workers from adult mental health programs in 2009 and 2010. Also during that period, budget cuts led to the closing of several regional health and welfare offices in rural areas of the state. Washington currently has the lowest number of families on welfare since 1990, at a time when all other indicators of poverty are on the rise, social services lobbyist Nick Federici told the Seattle Times. New rules impacting eligibility and making it more difficult to get welfare extensions are likely the cause of the decline, which has saved the state hundreds of millions of dollars in the short term. The new rules went into effect in 2011. Meanwhile, homeless shelter, Medicaid, and food stamp usage are rising in Washington. Tacoma attorney Jay Berneberg says Pierce County's ban on cannabis businesses in unincorporated areas of the county will likely be challenged in court by some of his 30 clients who have applied for licenses to sell, grow, or process the plant in the county. Referring to the county government, Berneberg told the Tacoma News Tribune, "They want a battle. They're going to get one. They're not going to win." Pierce County Prosecutor Mark Lindquist told the paper the county will argue federal law has supremacy and therefore they can keep the new ordinance in place. County Executive Pat McCarthy vetoed the ordinance, but last week the county council voted to override the veto. The Moscow City Council will be asked tonight to approve acceptance of a $50,000 Idaho Department of Commerce grant for infrastructure improvements. If accepted, the city will have to provide a 20% match for the grant for a variety of improvements, including 180 linear feet of ADA-compliant sidewalk, curb, gutter, asphalt patching, and removal of street trees on Jackson Street in the area of the former Daily News building. A company called 409 South Jackson LLC is remodeling the building to lease to Economic Modeling Specialists, which currently leases space in the Alturas Technology Park. The Department of Commerce GEM grant program is intended to help cities plan and develop assets directly related to economic growth. Along those lines, the agenda item mentions Economic Modeling Specialists had 53 full-time equivalent positions at the beginning of 2011, but plans on having 100 full-time equivalent positions at the end of this year. The City Council will also be asked to approve a signage policy for undeveloped city parklands. The policy will include placing a future home of sign on the parkland once the City Council has set a development date for the park. The council will also be asked to approve spending $1,575 for a professional landscape architect to do the design for the planned Blackbird Crossing Trail Station in front of Northwest River Supply's warehouse near Blaine Street on the Troy Highway. During last week's administrative committee meeting, the cost of hiring an architect was estimated to be $7,500. But since that meeting, city staff contacted Welch Comer and Associates, who is currently under contract with the city to design the city entryway beautification project. Welch Comer agreed to do the work for $1,575. The Moscow City Council will also be asked to approve the Moscow School District Joseph Street Community Playfields project design. The new ball fields, to be built on school district land at Mountain View and Joseph Street, are a joint project of the city and the school district, each of whom are putting $3 million into it. The council will also hear the 2013 Greenhouse Gas and Energy Efficiency Report update from city sustainability intern Keegan Caldwell. The council will also view the mayor's 10-year retrospective slideshow. Tonight's Moscow City Council meeting is the last one to be presided over by outgoing Mayor Nancy Cheney. Bill Lambert will take over as Moscow mayor at the January 6th meeting. Tonight's city council meeting begins at 7 p.m. at City Hall. The Spokane City Council tonight will be asked to vote on another proposed police oversight scheme after unanimously rejecting a previous version proposed by Mayor David Condon last month, saying it didn't go far enough. Most of the about 80 people who showed up Thursday at a Spokane meeting on Mayor Condon and Police Chief Frank Straub's plan for increasing oversight over police misconduct and brutality were there to critique the plan for not going far enough. The proposed ordinance would allow an unpaid citizen board to recommend a new independent investigation into police misconduct if the board finds an internal investigation by the police department was handled improperly. The ordinance would allow the city's police ombudsman to report to the citizens board after he sits in on each internal investigation. According to an account in the Spokesman Review, Police Chief Straub told the crowd at Thursday night's meeting at the West Central Community Center the ordinance provides the highest level of oversight granted by state law. The Spokane Police Guild has been working to defeat any form of independent investigative powers, saying union members believe independent investigations into misconduct constitute a change in working conditions and therefore must be specified in contract negotiations with the city. Straub, who took over as police chief late last year, said the police department has accepted ownership for the 2006 death of Otto Zem at the hands of police and said all officers will participate in crisis intervention training next year. In February, 70% of city residents voted in favor of giving the city ombudsman independent investigative powers in cases of police misconduct and brutality, but that won't happen under Condon and Straub's plan. Last month, the city council voted unanimously to reject a similar oversight plan put forward by Mayor Condon after getting most of those at the meeting to raise their hands after asking to see the hands of those who voted for Proposition 1 in February. Resident Tim Connor said, "We had an election, we voted, we gave you our voice, and you chose not to follow it." Julie Schaefer of the Center for Justice said having a discussion on changing the city charter amendment approved by voters has created a political fiasco and has led to distrust of elected officials. Justin Pimsangwan of the Don't Shoot movement said the movement towards independent investigation made recently is not enough. Pimsangwan said, "I've been very afraid of the police department. The Don't Shoot movement uses outreach by mentors in an attempt to reduce gun violence." Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Take a look at the weather from the National Weather Service. It'll be partly cloudy tonight with a low of 32, mostly sunny tomorrow, high 43, 30% chance of rain late Tuesday night towards morning, otherwise mostly cloudy, low 32. Rain likely Wednesday morning, then snow likely, 60% chance that day. Cloudy, high 39. 50% chance of snow showers Wednesday night, mostly cloudy, low 24. New snow accumulation less than half an inch possible Wednesday during the day, and another half inch possible Wednesday night. Mostly sunny Thursday, high 27. Currently, we've got fair skies, 36 degrees at the Pullman-Moscow Regional Airport. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next, we have Eat the Airwaves, news and opinions from the West Side, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. At 7:30, live in the studios, Climate Justice Forum with Helen Yost, and at 9:30, Earth First News, an update, and at 10 o'clock, music with Retro Rick. all news, information, and entertainment throughout the night here at KRFP Moscow. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a pleasant evening. And if you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, be sure to respond to our fundraising, end of the year fundraising letter, which just got sent out. You'll probably be getting one. If you aren't, you can contact the station and we'll get one to you. This is KRFP Moscow. Have a good night.